Please have a seat. I was heading south on the Tuggeranong Parkway on Wednesday, just about to exit onto Lady Denman Drive, which is one of my favourite little bits of road in Canberra. And I was half listening to the radio when I heard the phrase, blinding light. It was Victorian Premier Daniel Andrews promising, if re-elected, to hold a royal commission into mental health and saying something like, this will bring mental health out of the darkness and into the blinding light. But the phrase blinding light bothered me. Was that really what he meant to say? What is the point of a blinding light? If a light is so bright that it blinds its viewers, doesn't it defeat its purpose? Because what we need is a light that makes things clear, that makes them blindingly obvious. Aha! So blinding can refer to brightness and it can refer to clarity. So perhaps Daniel Andrews really did mean a blinding light. And there may be a biblical allusion buried in there somewhere too. Because how is the Apostle Paul made to see when he has been blind, when he has been breathing out threats and murder against the Christian believers? A blinding light shines around him. A light from heaven flashes around him. He sees the light, but he is made blind in the process. It's only 3 days later that his sight is restored. And where is Paul when this happens? You are all far too young, perhaps, to have done Sunday school exams, but it's a good Bible quiz question. Where is Paul or Saul when he has this experience? He is on the road to Damascus, very good. And so there is a phrase we call a blinding light or a revelation or something, a Damascus Road experience. Yes. This story from Mark this morning is not a straightforward healing story, but it's a story about being blind and having your eyes opened. Not just the eyes of Bartimaeus, but also the eyes of Jesus' disciples. The road leaving Jericho is their Damascus Road and their Damascus Road experience. Because here on the road leaving Jericho and in the restoration of Bartimaeus' sight, they discover that this is also the road that leads to Jerusalem. That this is the path of discipleship and the way of the cross. Our reading actually marks the end of a little section in Mark's Gospel that begins in chapter 8 with the partial and then full healing of another blind man. In that story, Jesus puts saliva on the man's eyes and lays hands on him. And he reports that he can see, but the people look like trees walking. And then in verse 25, Jesus laid his hands on his eyes again, and he looked intently, and his sight was restored, and he saw everything clearly. In the material between these two stories, Jesus tells his disciples three times that as the Son of Man, he will suffer and be rejected and die. And three times they fail to understand this. It is like they are blind. They are struggling to see. They are like the man who sees people, but they look like trees walking. And then finally, on the road leaving Jericho, what it means to be a disciple is made blindingly obvious. Did you notice in this picture on the cover of our bulletins by Julia Stankova that both Jesus and Bartimaeus have their eyes closed? And that they wear a similar expression. There's a visible likeness or an affinity between them. While the disciples, who have their eyes open, are looking here and there, looking lost and confused. For Bartimaeus, even though he is blind and even though he is a beggar shunted to the side of the path, made to sit on the floor, when he hears that it is Jesus of Nazareth, he shouts out, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." This nobody hails Jesus as a Davidic king, as he will be hailed again when he enters Jerusalem and where he will be crucified as King of the Jews. And the crowd around Bartimaeus don't just shush him, they tell him to shut up. Are they offended because he is a beggar daring to speak? Or are they offended by what he is saying? Or are they offended by both? That someone so far on the margins of their society is speaking theology into the center of their lives. Jesus, Son of God, have mercy on all of us. Bartimaeus only shouts louder, the text says, and Jesus, as the painting reveals, stands still and calls him. In one verse, we have the language of call three times. Jesus stood still and said, "Call him here." And they called the blind man, saying to him, "Take heart, get up. He is calling you." And Bartimaeus responds. He throws off his cloak, a sign of his commitment, and comes, and Jesus asks, "What do you want me to do for you?" On the heels of the passage before this, on the request of James and John to sit at the left and the right in the positions of honor, this is a telling question. What do you want me to do for you? But Bartimaeus only asks for his deepest desire, and the deepest desire of every true disciple: to see again more clearly. And Jesus acknowledges his faith. "Go, your faith has made you well." But Bartimaeus disobeys. He doesn't go. He follows Jesus on the way. Bartimaeus sheds a blinding light on what it means to be a disciple. He recognizes who Jesus is. He calls to Jesus in the words that are now enshrined in Christian practice and liturgy: "Lord, have mercy." Kyrie eleison. And Jesus calls to him. And Bartimaeus throws aside his possessions and his protection, all that would hold him back, and he asks for new or renewed sight. And with no hesitation, he takes the path of discipleship. Oh, to have the vision of Bartimaeus, to be able to see our path and our purpose with such commitment and such clarity. I don't know about you, but I see myself much more in the behavior of the visually and spiritually impaired disciples. Hearing Jesus say that he must suffer and be rejected and even die, and trying to help him reframe that future. Focusing on other things, like a poll, who's the greatest disciple? Or starting to picture who'll be sitting on his left and his right when he comes into his glory. There's a wonderful book called Space and Sight, written by Marius von Senden, in which he catalogues the case histories of the first people to receive safe cataract operations. Men and women of all ages who had been blinded by cataracts since birth. The first impressions of the newly sighted, he writes, is that the world is just a dazzle of colour patches. They are pleased by the sensation of colour and they learn to name these patches quickly. One girl rushed to tell a blind friend, echoing Mark chapter 8, "Men do not really look like trees, after all." And another, on seeing an actual tree for the first time, could only name the tree after laying hold of it and called it the tree with lights on it. A 22-year-old girl was so dazzled by the brightness that she kept her eyes shut for 2 weeks after the operation. And when she opened them, she couldn't recognize anything, but looking around her, von Senden writes, she exclaimed in gratification and astonishment repeatedly, "Oh God, how beautiful." For almost all the patients, however, it took much longer to understand form and shape. Before the operations, the doctors would routinely give them a cube and a sphere, and they would tongue it or feel it and identify it correctly. But after the operations, they were shown these two objects but were not able to touch them. And they had no idea what they were looking at. One little girl called Joan, looking at photographs and paintings, said to her mother, "Why do they put those dark patches on things?" And her mother said, "Those aren't dark marks. They are shadows. They have shape. If it weren't for those shadows, everything would look flat." "But that's exactly how things do look," said Joan. "Everything looks flat with dark patches." Understanding perspective, depth of field was also difficult. One man tried to gauge distance by taking off his shoes, his doctors observed, and throwing them across the room. And then he would take a few steps in the direction of the shoes and reach out for them. And failing to touch them, would take a few more tentative steps and reach for them until he finally got hold of his shoes. But for many of these people, the blinding light that they could suddenly see was just too much. One father who had hoped for so much for his daughter from the operation, wrote to the doctor that his daughter carefully shuts her eyes whenever she wishes to go around the house, especially when she comes to a staircase, and that she is never happier or more at ease when, by closing her eyelids, she relapses into her former state of total blindness. Another young boy, 15, who had left his girlfriend behind in the asylum for the blind, finally blurted out, "No, really, I can't stand it anymore. I want to be sent back to the asylum again. If things aren't altered, I will tear my eyes out." Wanting to tear your eyes out because the gift of vision is too great a gift. Walking around the house with your eyes tightly closed, even though you can now see. Can you imagine? And yet perhaps we can. Perhaps staring down the path of discipleship, seeing the way that Jesus trod, seeing the ways we are called to face the suffering, to share the suffering, to experience the rejection that many experience, to die to ourselves, we might prefer to keep our eyes shut. Perhaps when faced by the blinding light of God's holiness, God's love and justice, God's passionate response to the spiritual and physical and mental suffering of our world, God's desire to shine a blinding light on those things, we might wish to tear our eyes out too. On the front page of her website, this artist, Julia Stankova, includes a quote from another artist, Otto Dix. It says, "The passion of the Christ you can be told about in the Bible, but nevertheless, you have to experience it yourself, seeing for yourself, experiencing things on your own, being crucified yourself is what counts. Otherwise, you are a theorist. A stupid theorist." Are we merely theorists, or are we prepared to see God's passion for ourselves, to experience it ourselves? And if our eyes take some time to adjust to the blinding light, are we prepared to open our eyes, to open our eyes to see God's beauty and to experience God's pain? Are we prepared to keep looking and keep training our vision until we can see the shape and shadow and form of God's kingdom in our world? Are we prepared to keep stepping out and stepping out and reaching out to discover the limitless depth of God's love? God is calling to us. As we respond to that call, let us pray with Bartimaeus and with all disciples. Open the eyes of my heart, Lord. Open the eyes of my heart. We're going to sing this prayer together now. Thank you. open the